Hi, this is Roy Scruggs, and I'm here on Eva's radio show to actually perform an interview of her. Typically, what Eva does is to interview other people, and what we're doing on this occasion is to open the doors for her to discuss, from her point of view, some of the issues that we are centrally concerned with regarding consciousness, the nature of consciousness. Consciousness is a term that we all use, and we typically mean if you're not unconscious, you're conscious, right? And so that means being awake. To most people, it just simply means being awake. And if you're either unconscious due to trauma or you're unconscious due to sleep, we simply recognize that as being a situation where consciousness is not present. But that really doesn't tell us a whole lot about what consciousness actually is. And we think that there's probably more implied about that word than we really understand. So what we've been trying to do with these interviews is to get different points of view of different people who have spent, apparently, some of them quite a lot of time thinking about this issue of consciousness. And we do know now that it is important in science to have some better understanding of what consciousness is, because we have a lot of evidence that it is active in scientific processes and scientific endeavors. So I wanted to ask Eva to sort of give us an overview of what she perceives at this time as being the nature of consciousness. Eva?
Thanks, Roy. Thanks for doing this, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So ask me some specific questions.
Well, you know, one of the things that we've sort of conjectured is that consciousness probably has a good deal to do with our senses. You know, we have five senses, and perhaps most people think we probably have a sixth one. And so we know that consciousness is somehow connected with the senses, and it's also somehow connected with thinking. So when we think, we are said to be conscious. So I think at the point what we would want to say is to begin the dialogue here is to get Eva to give us an overview, a kind of a general view that she has picked up in her meditations and her explorations, and tell us perhaps in general terms what she is receiving about the nature of consciousness. Eva?
Well, I think, you know, when this happened to me, Roy, it changed who I was. It took me from being this black and white analytical paralegal woman to this thinker on certain topics, and those topics being alternative medicine, frequencies, and consciousness. And I didn't know anything about those things before, nor did I care. But I think that I'm getting information that's going to be valuable to mankind as it relates to those topics. And one being that I believe that information is encoded within frequencies that can help us have predictable outcomes based on a particular frequency of the aura. We just got to figure out how to measure it. Or maybe science already knows how, and I just don't know. But I think that, and then I think on the topic of quantum physics, and I hate to call it that because I don't even know what I'm talking about, but, you know, I give you all these descriptions sometimes in my book, maybe, and sometimes when we sit around and talk about of things that you, from a physicist's point of view, say it makes a lot of sense, and for me not to know anything about it and suddenly be able to tell you something that makes some sense tells me there must be something that somebody needs to listen to. And I think that I have information on consciousness about how it exists and how it functions in physical reality in the hologram. And I'm interested in putting together what I know coupled with what the science world knows in hopes that we can hopefully raise people's awareness and help them have predictable outcomes in their lives in the form of health and behavior issues. that makes any sense.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Well, I think that certainly, in terms of the way you're approaching it, science would very, very much be interested in the frequency aspect of this, because frequency is so fundamental in most science that we do, that physicists and other scientists generally tend to think in those terms, even in quantum physics, as you mentioned, although there are some differences in quantum theory. But I think this point of view that frequency is fundamental is a real good starting point to open up a dialogue between you and others who are intuitives, along with the scientists, and see if we can uncover something in there that we all can raise our hands on and say, yeah, you know, and we can build perhaps a model in that way. Go ahead a little bit more with your experience here in terms of what the frequencies mean.
Well, I know that each organ vibrates at a specific rate. And I know that rate's in hertz. Now, whether it's kilohertz or gigahertz, I don't know. But I do get numbers in my head. And I know that the numbers, it might be, for example, a prostate. And I might say that organ vibrates at 16,283.27. Well, the fact that it's 27 tells me something. It tells me that it's off frequency, for one, because I believe that the body's supposed to vibrate at even numbers. And the fact that that 0.27, and it's important that it's 0.27 as well, because I think energy's subtle. So we have to be as exact as we can in these measurements to the 0.1 hundredths. What 0.1 hundredths of what? I don't know. But I'm sure somebody knows. And so the fact that it's 27 first tells me that there's some kind of organism involved, a parasite of some sort of bacteria or virus or something. If it were even, then it would just be something to do probably with emotion. So I believe, you know, these little frequency machines, especially like the one that Paul Esch made for me with the numbers, I have this machine that's got 8 numbers. 2 of them are to the decimal point. And I enter numbers in it that I hear in my head, and it seems to be healing people. In fact, I did something with Dean Radden where I've had something going on with his stomach, and we entered a frequency 16,000-something-something.68. I don't remember what it was, but Dean would know. And 6 weeks later, he sends me an email. And the way we did this, we printed out a picture of him off the Internet, and I wrote the word stomach on it. And then I put this little frequency machine that I made on top of his picture and set it there. And 6 weeks later, I get an email from him telling me that his stomach's healed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing I think that frequency is important about. The other thing is, and I'm not quite sure, I'm just thinking on this right now. I'm not quite finished with my processing on it. But I know that our energy field is in bands, and it comes in the colors of the like the rainbow, and it starts with the lowest vibrating color, whatever that is, and goes up. And each one of the bands is made up of tiny lines of frequency, and those frequencies making those particular colors of that band. And that's what makes up our aura, is that band. So number one, I think that at some point in time, and I'm not sure yet if we're going to have to test the individual line in the color of frequency, or if we're going to be able to just to test the whole band or the whole aura feel. I'm not sure yet. I'm still thinking on that. Still waiting on information to drop in. But at some point in time, we're going to be able to get a number from that energy field to the 0.1 hundredths, and say if we had a number like 333,572.39. Well, first of all, that's a negative number. So that tells me that it's going to bring about some kind of negative effect. I mean, not a negative number, an odd number, but we kind of associate odd with negative and positive with positive, you know, even, I mean. And so The fact that it's an odd number tells me that it's going to bring about a negative effect to begin with. Second of all, I think that at some point in time, we're going to be able to tell that that particular frequency, having an odd charge to it, I mean, odd number, negative charge to it, we can predict the exact behavior. Like that particular number might mean, I want to hit someone. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's odd number, so it's going to produce a negative behavior. So we could literally predict the consciousness, the way it existed in a human being, whether it was a good positive thing or a negative thing, and do predictable behavior. And second, I think that we can predict disease by that way, testing those numbers and learning which numbers match up with which disease or organ. Mm-hmm. And then I think it can be adjusted with frequency fields to cure it.
Yes, right. That's
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's consistent with what some other people have found experimentally. The Priori machine, for example, in France was based on a concept similar to that, and also the work that was done by Royal Rife is consistent with that as well as some other people, that that what we would call, in physics, we would call resonances. And one could generally, I suppose, think of the body as being made up of a lot of fields, all of which are resonant in some way, and they come together in one coherent. Presumably, when they're all operating properly, they're all at the right frequency, and the whole body becomes a whole thing. You know, becomes whole. In other words, healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that makes sense from the scientific point of view, and some of the intuitive revelatory material that you're getting, you know, perhaps our challenge is to try to interpret that in scientific terms. But it's like anything else, you know, you have to continue to explore it and fill it out and give it body, and at some point along the way, it all starts to come together and make sense, and we start to think we know something. So I think that's important.
Well, the emotional issues that I think will be attached to those frequencies, like behaviors, whether you hit somebody, whether you feel loving, whether you feel sweet, whether you feel angry, whether you act upon those feelings, you know, whether you go out and shoot somebody or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that part is going to be in the higher numbers, like in the lower hundreds, thousands of something, some measurement.
Mm-hmm.
I think when it gets down to like below 50,000, it's 50,000 what again? I don't know. I think that's going to be the physical body. And I think obviously if it's bands of energy that goes up, then it's got the issue starts at the top and comes down. So it starts on a consciousness level first and moves down through the various fields until it manifests in the physical body. So I think, you know, if we could use this to detect the illness while it's still on the conscious level, it doesn't have to manifest in the physical body. And I think that you can detect it in these changes of frequency fields. They're so subtle, like to the 0.100s, that they change subtly too, you know, to 0.27, 0.29, to the going up to the next number. So I think we have about 10 years prior to the illness gets in the body that we can actually start detecting changes.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, what you're saying is that the origin of the onset of disease, that is for the body to feel not at ease, which is what disease means, is manifested in the physical body well after it is detected at the higher level of high consciousness.
Yes.
And that somehow or other it cascades down in frequency until it gets down to body frequencies.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And by that time you've got an actual physical manifestation of
the
disease.
That's right.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, yeah, that does. Uh-huh.
And I think that every emotion is stored in a particular part of the body. And the way I think that happens is... For example, I think love and hate store in the heart. Of course, everything is a derivative of love and hate to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But I think once it gets beyond that particular band where that frequency is carried, it shifts to a different thing like lack of nurturing or resentment or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think lack of nurturing issues in men and women are in the prostate and the reproductive organs in the women. I think if you've been touched inappropriately, I hadn't met a person yet that's a woman that was touched inappropriately that didn't have breast issues, ultimately getting cancer. So I think, you know, if we can get science to believe us that this is real, we can do tremendous amounts for preventive medicine, in preventive medicine.
Well, of course, in order to, right, and I agree with what you're saying, rationally incorporate scientific inquiry into this requires, you know, an orderly experimental procedure for establishing that that is the fact. So if we could actually, build a catalog, so to speak, where a certain frequency belongs to a certain organ and any distortion of that frequency would imply a malfunction of that organ, then this is something that science can handle. Now, again, you know, Rife, as well as Priori, which was a long time ago for Priori, drew similar conclusions, and they never did, really get that far along with trying to catalog all the various malfunctions in terms of frequency. And they certainly did not have the idea that you have, that this comes from a higher level of consciousness initially. Now, I think that's a real contribution.
Well, I think Bill Tiller, I'm reading one of his books right now, I can't think of the name, the first one, whatever that is. His theory, his model supports this.
Mm-hmm.
It seems very significant I'm just going to say it the way I feel, for a complete idiot about this kind of stuff to know it.
Mm-hmm.
And for me to know it literally overnight.
Mm-hmm.
It came from somewhere.
Right.
If you only knew me, well, you do, but the people that's listening, you know, they don't understand that I have absolutely no interest in this one day, and the next day I did.
Right.
It came from somewhere. Anyway, as to the conscious mind and how I think the disease manifests, I think that these energy lines, there are horizontal ones and vertical ones. I think the information drops down vertically. And I think that it does that in these fields with encoded information. And the way that information is time, space, intervals, a pulse in our autonomic nervous system is where I think it is. It's a pulse. It's more like a pulse surge kind of thing. So say it goes surge, surge, surge. Search, search, search. Well, that's basically like rat-a-tat-tat, rat-a-tat-tat.
Okay.
If it goes rat-a-tat-tat, rat-a-tat-tat, and then all of a sudden it starts going rat-a-tat-tat, tat,
mm-hmm.
rat-a-tat-tat, tat, that pulse is telling us something.
Mm-hmm.
The rate that pulse is pulsing, and maybe it has to be tested on an individual, maybe each band has to do with a particular organ. I'm sure that's what it is. And these pulses, if we can detect them with machines, you'll see that rat-tat-tat would be associated with a kidney disorder. And the way I think that happens is, we all know how it feels when a police officer comes up behind you and turns on the blue light. You get a funny, sick feeling in your stomach.
Right.
Well, science, you know, now knows that the abdomen and the organs have neurons on them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, neurons are brain cells. No, I mean, excuse me, nerve cells.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what is a nerve cell? It talks. So the fact that we have a talking cell sitting on top of our abdomen or an organ tells me something, that it's communicating with the brain. What else could it be? Who else would it talk to?
Exactly.
And so I think when you get that, you know, anytime you have anything bad happen in your life, if you think about this, if you'll close your eyes and pull up that emotion into your life, like whoever that person was that touched you inappropriately is standing in front of you, touching you inappropriately.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel that sick feeling you get in your stomach.
Mm-hmm.
I know that sick feeling is neurons firing and that it's sending an impulse to the heart. And then the heart sends an impulse to the brain. And then the brain releases neurotransmitters and then neuropeptides. And somehow, and I don't know all the words here because I'm limited to my vocabulary, but somehow that neuropeptide or neurotransmitter, I don't know how to distinguish between the two, quite frankly, but that specific one will be tied to a specific organ.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I think that when that peptide gets released, or the transmitter, whatever it is, that it goes down to that organ and it tells that organ, this doesn't feel good to me, mm-hmm. and this is where this emotion stores is in you. So I want you to get hard so I don't have to feel it. You know, you've always heard that phrase, a hard-hearted person,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right.
So you don't have to feel the emotion.
Right.
Well, what happens when something gets hard? It has to vibrate at a slower speed. We all know that a rock has a slower oscillation speed than a piece of silk. Because it's more dense.
Sometimes it does, yes.
So, that, you know, what is cancer?
Yeah.
Denseness. The organ's going to obviously slow down.
Yeah. If you're, you know, the thing you said earlier that has immediate appeal to scientists would be the encoding that you talked about. And how that encoding drops down into the body. It sounds very, very much like what we call digital encoding, which is what for example, your cell phone uses digital encoding,
yeah.
Right? And that's all, it's digital, based on just two symbols, zero and one. And
we build a
binary coding is fundamentally what it is. And this is the way these pulses can be encoded and dropped down as being surges, as you call them, and be able to send a signal directly into the body, activating something in the body. But the interesting thing here seems to me is that your assertion that this seems to come from initially from a higher level of consciousness and then expresses at the lower frequency level of the body, which makes a lot of sense. You know, the body is pretty dense. Physical reality is pretty dense, and so it's typically characterized by lower frequencies. And we all know about the assertions made by mystics, for example, that the higher level universe vibrates at a very high frequency, very high, much higher than what we normally experience. And so that's consistent. That's consistent with that view. And see, it seems to me that one of the things that we need to do in general is to see if we can't take some clues from people like yourself and other people who have generally been regarded as, you know, for millennia, actually, as being mystics, such as Christ and Buddha and Taoism and so forth. They've all had this consistent point of view that higher being is at higher frequency. And so what you're saying is that it would appear from what you're saying is that the initial onset of the discomfort, if you will, occurs at a higher level way before it ever gets to the body.
Yeah.
And then winds up being expressed in the body. But would it be fair to say, though, that when you mention the trauma, let's say sexually inappropriate touching of a young girl, when that imprint occurs on the body, is that transferred up to the higher level of consciousness, do you think?
I think that it's known everywhere.
Okay, so in other words... Okay, all right. So, yeah, right. And this is consistent with the quantum mechanical point of view that things are kind of non-local. You know, it goes everywhere.
The way I see it in my head as We are. There is a sea of atoms in the universe. I don't know what it's called. I know it's more vast than that, but in all there is a sea of atoms.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that it starts out. Let's go to the smallest atomic structure before you go quantum, just to the hydrogen atom.
Mm-hmm.
So we all know that's a basic building block.
Mm-hmm.
One proton, a neutron, one electron, a field of hydrogen atoms everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then intent is placed from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it causes the point, the direction of the intent. Say I focus out there 500 feet ahead of me, and I'm really strong with my conscious empowerment. And I focus, and so all of a sudden a tree starts forming in front of me, a full-grown tree.
Mm-hmm.
It starts out as a ghostly form, but then it gets more and more and more dense until it becomes a piece of wood.
Mm-hmm.
At first, though, you can see through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's how everything is, and the only thing that separates any one thing from another thing is the speed at which it vibrates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That really there is no distinction between anything, because everything's just a field of hydrogen atoms clumped here and there together that form the various things in physical reality, oscillating at a different speed.
So basically you're saying that physical reality is a set of frequencies, actually. So there are frequencies associated with a tree,
mm-hmm.
frequencies associated with a rock, frequencies associated with a human body.
Yeah, and that's the only distinct thing about anything.
I would tend to agree with that. Yes, I think so.
Now, if you'd have told me that, how can you remember my father used to talking to me about this when I was a kid, and I thought he was crazy, and telling me there was no time? I didn't understand that at all.
Mm-hmm.
But now I understand, if we don't have a clock, what time is it?
Right
now time?
Right, yeah.
But, and the significance here, again, to me, is the fact that you went from a woman who knew nothing about this,
mm-hmm.
that if, when somebody tried to tell me that we lived in a hologram, I thought you were crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And for that woman who had been profoundly in denial about living in a hologram, the next day say that we did, there's something important there. Where did that come from?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where did that come from?
Mm-hmm.
Had to come from somewhere.
Well, I mean, you know, there have been people, certainly in the past, who had sudden revelatory experiences that happened in a very short period of time. I mean, for example, Krishnamurti, he related how suddenly one day at age 12, he, within just apparently a matter of minutes,
it's instantaneous.
Totally transformed, yeah.
You know, Eckhart Tolle had the same experience, if you've read that book. Now.
Yes, there have been a number of cases.
And it comes down, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. It comes down like all at once. It's not like it drags out.
Right.
The whole thing all at one time.
Yes, and that's essentially the nature of a hologram, right?
And that would be the nature of encoding information in frequencies, too.
That's exactly what a hologram does. Yes, it encodes in frequencies. That's exactly right, and it encodes the same information everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
In the
How could it not? I wouldn't understand that.
Well, a hologram is a relatively new thing. You know, I mean,
you can't dispute it.
No.
I mean, even an idiot like me.
Right.
I mean, if you look at an atom of hydrogen underneath the microscope, if you could see it. You'd
mm-hmm.
see one proton, one neutron, and one electron.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd see another one right beside it, just like it, just oscillating at a different
mm-hmm.
speed, you know, the independent.
Mm-hmm.
At a not a speed, but a different rotation, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
What's holding it together? Nothing? Black matter, maybe?
Well, no, I mean, the electron and the proton are thought to be held together by
a field or something.
Electric field.
But there's no piece, no string connecting it.
No, that's right. And one of the great difficulties in...
How could it not be a hologram?
Yeah, I guess you could look at it that way. And one of the great difficulties in physics is understanding what a field is, because it doesn't seem to be able to support a force. between two things. It's force at a distance. So there's been a lot of work done in that area, and particularly in quantum mechanics.
Well, it seems to me that if there's horizontal and vertical lines of frequency, and they're moving, that there's going to be energy created there.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
It's only logical.
That's entirely consistent with what physics determines to be the case. Yeah. One of the problems in physics is something called duality, where in quantum mechanical experiments we find sometimes that when we do an experiment, the effect will be frequency-like, that is, wave-like. And we take a different view of the experiment, do it a little bit differently, and it acts like a particle, like it has mass, you know, solidity.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And that's called duality, the wave-particle duality phenomenon. And, you know, there's reason to believe that that's probably not the case, that there is no actual particle behavior, but that's a matter of dispute right now.
What? If there's a particle, there's got to be mass. I don't believe mass exists.
I personally tend to agree with that.
I mean, if you look at mass under a microscope, again, what are you going to see but particles?
Yeah, well,
what are you going to see below that? More particles.
Yeah, and finally it dissolves. It finally dissolves, and you can't go any further. A guy one time who was one of those people who had a mystical experience and was fundamentally changed, a guy named Walter Russell. And he said one time that matter, as we think of matter, that is solidity, was nothing but frozen light. And so that's a good metaphor for it, I think, that we can think of it as frozen light, because light, we understand light to be frequency. It is, you know, if you see a blue light, it has a higher frequency than a red light.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this frequency distribution that creates light. And he simply said, well, look, you can think of that as taking the light waves and in some sense you freeze them, hold them in place. Well, and that creates the illusion of a non-moving particle.
Well, speaking of that blue and red light, that's another significant thing to me, and I don't really know what yet. Because when I got this information, it was a couple of years ago when I first channeled my book, Agape. But there was something in there about electromotive force and cleansing souls of negativity. Now, I understand so much more than when I wrote that book. And now what I think that it means is like the soul, I believe, is an electromagnetic field. Or it's contained within one anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's something else, some consciousness, and I don't know how that's measured. Well, I do know how it's measured, but I don't know how it's... I don't even know what I'm trying to say here, but anyway. So if a soul has negativity, the human being has negativity, that pink and red light's important somehow, because I get the picture of Darth Vader on Star Wars, and that lightsaber he and Luke Skywalker had,
mm-hmm.
And I see one, the pink one on one side of the soul, and the blue one on the other side of the soul, like in a band of light,
mm-hmm.
And something about electromotive force, you charge it with one amount of energy, and of the same kind.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be the kind that there's the smaller amount of, because you're going to be mostly positive energy as a soul on a spiritual level anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But there'll be remnants left over. And how you heal that is use that electromotive force in it, and it somehow it knocks the negative particles out. Now, I know that sounds really weird to talk about, but somehow I know that if we use that blue and red light in life today as we know it, that we would get healing from it emotionally.
Both from the blue and the red?
Yeah, you got to use one of them greater than the other.
Uh-huh.
Say if you had 35% negative energy and 65% positive, you got to get that 35% out to be whole.
Mm-hmm.
So you would shock it with negative energy, but more than the 35%, and it would knock that 35% out somehow. Does mm-hmm. that make sense?
Yeah, it's kind of a purification, I guess, is what you're purifying the frequencies.
Is that the description of electromotive force make any sense?
Yeah, well,
I don't know how to describe it any better because it's a picture in my head.
Well, here again, mystics who've experienced very high levels of meditation consistently report that whatever else you may experience in that level of being, one thing you always get is a very pure tone.
Yeah.
Or frequency. Now, you could call it, if you wanted to use the metaphor of a sound, and many people do, you could say that, or you could say it was a light wave or simply an electromagnetic wave, right? Mm-hmm. But the point is, it's very pure frequency, unvarying, and does no static, no noise in it. Right, it's pure.
That's right.
It's a pure tone,
mm-hmm.
and now that means that you can think of that tone as something that has been cleansed of all other frequency content.
And that's right.
And
that's
it's
right.
there as one, and that's what part of what they mean when they say you experience a sense of oneness, because you are that frequency and nothing else but that frequency. Right. And
mm-hmm.
so this is. The interpretation, at least, that I put on it. Now, I don't know what other scientific thinkers would say about that. But anyway, it's a nice orderly way of thinking about it. I put it that way.
I just want to say this one thing before we move to our next question. The other day, I was listening to this CD of tones from those crystal singing bowls, and my 6-year-old walked in, and out of the blue, he said to me, "Did you know that's God?" And I said, "What's God?" And he said, "That sound."
Yeah, yeah.
You know, how does he know that?
Yeah, I know. This is deep information that we bring in here with us when we come in. That's where we came from. So
mm-hmm.
it's not surprising that at some deep level we have a memory of where we came from. That's interesting. Now, you know, the medical aspects of this... or what you've been concentrating most on, and certainly that aspect of it is important. But you may have noticed that I've been commenting here more along the lines of the general structure of consciousness is where we're trying to go. Because we're talking about things that are manifestations of consciousness. We're obviously the body, and whenever the body is out of sorts, then, it's losing its pure tones. And so that certainly is an aspect. There are other things in physics, though, that are perhaps equally important. And if we can understand more about consciousness, maybe we come up with a better model, or at least a better way of thinking about it.
Okay, ask me a question about that.
The consciousness... again, we said, we started out talking about the fact that we had senses. And so we were aware of our senses, our feelings, even if they're internal feelings or if they're feelings of touch. So anyway, you have feelings, and then you think, and then there's something called self-awareness. So you have sensate awareness. In other words, you know that you are because you feel something, right? And you know that you are because you think something. And then there's another level that says that you know you are because you are aware of being a self, that is, being distinct from whatever it is. Right, and you have a unique identification as what we call a self. Now, the word here is a little self, a little s, which is the same thing as Freud's ego. And so, but it's a very elusive thing. We all have it, but it's very, very elusive to try to define that. In any useful way. And clearly, this higher level of consciousness that we're talking about, in some way, it is responsible for this creation of self-awareness, and indeed even thinking awareness and feeling awareness, right? It is responsible for all of those. And one of the things we need to be looking at here is, okay, what is the nature of this consciousness at the higher level where those aspects don't, it's pre-emergent, if you will. What is it about consciousness that is there even if you don't have a physical world? And so now we're thinking of it here, right, at a pretty high level, perhaps too high for our uses. But we probably need to get some kind of definition of what that is. Now, the mystics have always said, look, you know, the world is spirit, right? And we are spirits having a physical experience. But what we would really like to know is, can we go any further with our connection between physical reality and spiritual reality and have something that's useful to science?
Well, if I understand you right, I think consciousness is. What I mean by that is I think consciousness is a state of being. Whatever that might be, it's just simply sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the atoms oscillating in the field,
mm-hmm.
buzzing, you know. And I think that the electrons and the protons, I think that they oscillate. And I think that they transmit and receive at the same time, like a revolving door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, energy coming and going at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's just constantly sitting there with energy pulsing at some kind of at zero point, whatever that would be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that means, but at zero, we're non-manifest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that suddenly some intent comes along
mm-hmm.
and causes atoms to either oscillate an electron or proton, and through that intent that's placed, physical reality is manifested. So, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I think what you're saying is that consciousness, in and of itself, might not be objective.
It's certainly not just simply being dead or alive. It's the state before manifestation.
Yes, right, yes, yeah.
If that makes sense.
Or at least it's characteristic of a state. It might not in and of itself be in any sense palpable. That is, it's not something that you can objectively identify. It perhaps it's just a property. Right, of being,
mm-hmm.
and it has, and the properties of consciousness perhaps vary depending on the level of expression, whether we're expressing consciousness in the physical body, or whether we're expressing or experiencing consciousness at a higher level.
I think of it as being like an octopus, with I've got to take some form on here so that we can describe the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll use an octopus. And the head of it would be like the source of intent, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
The state, that pre-existing state. And then suddenly, through one leg of the octopus, at the end of every leg is a puppet. Like Santa Claus or Barney mm-hmm. or me or you, mm-hmm. you know, because none of them think. The puppet doesn't think, and we don't think. You know, it's just all atoms vibrating.
Mm-hmm.
So the consciousness says, I want to experience what it feels like to be in Eva Herr's life, and I want to be 5'6", and I want to have dark hair, and I want to have an assertive personality,
mm-hmm.
and I want to be independent thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And so suddenly Eva Herr is in reality.
Mm-hmm.
And the way Eva Herr's role is decided what to do is the way consciousness, the frequency at which consciousness exists in the leg of that octopus.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, right, right. Yeah.
That it, right. You know, the thing, and I think that comes down into the physical body through vertical energy lines.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh.
And then the thing that makes us, you know, whether we understand I think that, like David Hawkins says, there are levels of consciousness.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I think the evidence is very clear on that. Yeah.
I'm pretty happy with his 11 levels. I think it could probably needs some more work, because there's not just 11 levels. There's also distinctions within those levels based on the amount of cohesion of the electromagnetic field, whether you're, whether you're scatterbrained or whether you're focused in it, you know?
Right. Well, that's consistent with auric studies that have concluded the same thing.
I think that needs to be expanded on. In fact, I'm working on that myself.
Well, what I tell you, I generally, at this point, I tend to think of consciousness as being as ephemeral as it may be, you know, and it's so hard to define. But it seems like that it's either necessary or a result of intention, and that consciousness actually is sort of like the vehicle that delivers intention into the world.
Yeah.
In that sense, you know. Even though it might... in and of itself, it might be so ephemeral that we can't ever get our hands on it. We may not be able to, but at least we know what it can do and what it can't do, and that's what's important.
If we can agree that it exists,
right?
Because it has to.
Yeah.
And if we can agree that intent is powerful, which Dean Radin and Tiller and a bunch of people have done, they've already done that. They've already proven that.
Right.
But you want to admit it or accept it, that's,
been repeatedly demonstrated all over the world.
That it's there.
Yeah.
Then we have to admit also that it's energy. If something happens from it, I say this story all the time, you wouldn't stand in a metal fishing boat in a lightning storm because water conducts electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happens when you think a thought?
Mm-hmm.
An electrical charge is created. It's a mini lightning bolt, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's conducted by water to jump from synaptic gate to synaptic gate to synaptic gate.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that to be true.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you think that lightning bolt has any idea it hits the fishing boat? No. Do you think that electrical charge in your head has any idea it's contained within a bone? No, because it's the same atom field that the charge is.
Yeah.
So the same, so it goes somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there is, that it's either charged by an electron or a proton or a smaller unit thereof.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if it's an electron, it's going to cause negative things to happen in the world, negativity. Mm-hmm. You know how you feel when you walk in a room and somebody's in a mean or hateful and a bad mood. You know, it doesn't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's carried through electromagnetic fields.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if it's one of those kind of feelings, it's going to be an electron. If it's a proton oscillating, I think it's going to be good feelings, good emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, number one, that proves the power of intent,
mm-hmm.
because we've already proven that it changes feels and does make people feel differently.
Right.
And I think it also makes us have to believe that it exists. And why things that go around come around.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, if an atom transmits and receives at the same time, then it would only be logical that what goes around comes around.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes.
So people, if they can understand that and accept it on this basic form, what can they do to change their lives?
Right. Yeah. Well, it seems to me that what that's saying, at least in part, is that the philosophical difficulties we've always had with the notion of cause and effect... We can't find any termination in the chain of cause and effect. And my position is to take that as simply as I can and say, look, ultimately, cause and effect is initiated through intent. And I don't have to go any further than that.
I think that it takes about 10 years of average consciousness, if we're talking on Hawkins' scale,
mm-hmm.
of average consciousness, that if you place intent It will happen within 10 years. Now, the higher your consciousness, the higher your frequency of your electromagnetic field is of your aura, the faster you can manifest. But otherwise, I think that it's about 10 years. You're living right now what you were thinking about or not thinking about 10 years ago.
Okay. Makes sense. Yeah. Right.
So if you start, if you don't want to live this way in the next 10 years, change the way you think.
Mm-hmm.
Oscillate a different kind of particle. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I don't think we have free will either, by the way. Complete. I think we have free will to place intent.
Right, yeah. I've never quite understood what free will means, frankly. We all generally agree that we know what will means. If you will to do something like scratch yourself, you just exercised your willpower. But free will, because I have a problem with what free is. I don't really understand free. So, therefore, I can't really say what free will is. Again, it's one of those terms that's used pretty much universally by people, and we think we understand what it means, but upon close examination, we find out, we're not really quite sure we understand what that means.
Well, I think if we had free will, then you could guarantee me that you could meet me at Starbucks tomorrow at 2 o'clock.
Right.
But you can't do it.
Right.
You know, you can be late, you can get in a wreck, you can get in traffic, you can get a phone call, you can forget.
Right.
But, you know, we have intent to say, yes, I'll meet you at 3 o'clock if nothing comes up.
Right. Yeah.
Otherwise, I'll be there.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I don't think that we're driving the car. I think we're like in a little car seat with a yellow steering wheel. In the back seat, we think we're driving the car, but we're not. The consciousness of all there is drives the car with intent.
Yes, that's right. Yes. The thing about free is that it's such a relative term. You're free to the extent that you don't have any constraints, but you always have constraints. You know, you don't get there to the coffee meeting because something happened in between that confounded you in trying to do that. It's philosophically kind of hard to deal with. But I don't know that it's necessary to deal with issues like free will. I don't. I think, at least in talking about consciousness, and rather to think more in terms of the relationship between intent, intention, and consciousness might be more productive for us. Again, particularly from the standpoint of scientific use of the concept of consciousness. But the experiments of Radin and the Pear Lab and the list goes on and on and on. There's a clear demonstration that intention is present and it does have physical consequences.
Well, as it relates, let's go back to that frequency machine that I used on Dean.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that makes that thing run is intent.
Mm-hmm.
It's got 4 volts that comes out of it, and it runs off of a battery. And I just wrote down the word. So what I think happens is it carries continuous intent. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't sit there 24 hours a day for a month and have total intent
mm-hmm.
on Dean's stomach. That's unreasonable.
Right.
But that volt, I mean, that voltage sitting on top of the picture with the word, and the exact frequency carried that intent constantly, which facilitated quicker healing.
Yeah. Or certainly activates the intention, right? It would certainly do that. And once the intention is activated, I guess you could say that it takes off on its own, you know, and it goes and does what it intends to do, literally speaking. That's a good way to look at that, too, by the way. Yeah. That once you activated it, that's it.
Yeah, it just continues to carry constantly.
Yes, right.
Now, another thing in my interview that I want science to listen to is, once this gift came on to me, I realized that I've been doing it all along and I just didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
And so does every other person that walks around.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever had an idea, you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Because the way this information comes into me is, I hear words, in my sentences. I just carry on a dialogue in my head, basically. But you know when you get an idea and you hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness, that's the perfect idea and the perfect solution to this problem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the way it comes.
Mm-hmm.
So what you have to do is simply fine-tune it to learn to discern.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that absolutely anybody can do what I do. I think medical intuition is the cutting edge of the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that science needs to listen to this because we're going to it whether they like it or not. You know, it's happening. And they need to start using it and covering it with insurance because it's happening.
Yeah, I agree. I think that what we're in the midst of now is what I would call the next great evolutionary step for human beings, and that is the transition to holistic viewings of the world. Not giving up the reductionist. In other words, we're still going to build automobiles and airplanes and TVs and telephones the way we always have. And that is based on what we call reductionism, which is the way science has always approached the world. But it's possible to, you know, take that whole issue and sort of in some asymptotic way, you commit that to the computer, so that you spend less and less time and effort taking things apart, literally, is what you do with reductionism. You deal with things in its smallest pieces and then put them back together again and claim that you understand them. If you can commit more and more of that to the computer, then it opens up more space for us to think in whole terms, wholeness,
or
holistic views.
It has to happen because another thing that I think is I think that we are on a cusp. And I think that the whole world, as we know it, vibrates at a particular frequency.
Mm-hmm.
As an overall mass. I mean, it's going to have one number as an overall mass.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that number, whatever that number is getting ready to move up to the next band of frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that based on what percentage of that is negative or electron-motivated
mm-hmm.
energy
mm-hmm.
or versus what percentage of that is proton-motivated energy, like the scales of justice, it's going to determine whether we have a good world to live in or a bad world to
mm-hmm.
live in.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening right now under our own noses. We, 50 years ago, we didn't have gangs on every street corner. It's happening with your children in your own homes under your own nose.
Particularly with drugs. Yes, that's right.
And violence.
And violence, yes.
And it's very, and the acceptance of alternative medicine and frequency-based science is important in making this shift go to a positive weight
mm-hmm.
in that scale.
Right.
And if we don't do something right now,
mm-hmm.
our children and our grandchildren are going to have no place to live worth living because it's all free. There's information encoded within frequency fields, and the number that this field is going to do go to is going to be a bad number.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I don't know what that number is at that field, but it's going to be bad, and we're not going to have water that's clean or fit to drink.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have violence everywhere we look, and we're going to have food issues, and somebody better do something besides us.
Yes, right.
Because it's frequency-based, people, so that means that whatever we think affects it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You better start treating everybody else like you want to be treated.
Right, right. Yeah.
And another thing that has to, you know, that's important here is, I don't know why, but it's important for people to know this, things come in threes. I don't know why, but I have seen lots and lots of physics books on that, even though I don't understand what they're talking about.
Mm.
That when you're traveling down the road in your life and you hit some bumpy roads, dark nights of the soul, misery, pain, loss, it's because you're not listening to something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's
mm-hmm.
ideas trying to come into your head, and you're not listening to them or acting on them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so synchronicities come in threes. If you listen to that synchronicity, and the synchronicity to me is when some weird thing happened, like the fact, you know, that I have this gift of it, and the fact that these people are doing these things for me, and it's just weird things happening, which tells me that consciousness is at play. When weird things starts happening in your life, they'll happen in threes, and watch for them, and do something. And the way you do that is you speak and be kind to every single person you meet. Because if you don't, you might miss a synchronicity that'll lead to that perfect job or the perfect place to live or your new spouse or something. But you've got to listen to those synchronicities and act on them. And you do it through a kaffet. By being kind to people. That way you don't miss anything. And when you do, it's like going from a bumpy road to an interstate. Now, you must know there must be some physics behind that, but I'm telling you, it's the truth.
I don't know that there is any physics. I put it this way. Certainly, there probably is physics associated with what you're saying. I don't think there's any question about that. But whether the physics is, you know, my position on it is that physics is a result.
Well, yeah,
it's not a cause, it's a result. And it is a result of intention. But intention...
is it there the numbers or the symbols that prove these things?
Yeah,
in
it's just the clues we're given that says, you know, you're given clues all the time that say that there is a higher reality. And we're given those clues through physical reality. We actually see them there. But they're clues to the higher order of being. And certainly
That's
what you
right.
were talking about is part of that.
And I think that science, you know, they have done a great job so far. But they have got to admit that the work's not finished. And stop being in this priesthood or whatever it is that they're in and ignoring that. I mean, somebody can't tell me that I don't do what I do. You know, let me do it for you and then tell me that it doesn't exist.
Well, my own position on this is that you can do physics. The way physics is most often done is from a materialistic point of view, which says that there is no, you know, the world has to be objective. Or else we can't deal with it. And so you can't really admit subjectivity. But unfortunately for the scientist, or fortunately for all of us, it turns out that subjectivity is in play, and it has been demonstrated in quantum mechanical experiments that that is the case. Or at least the implication is overwhelming that must be true. Right? But yet the materialists will continue to put that aside, right, and just use it as a tool, right, rather than admitting it at some higher level. And so that's. But now, on the other hand, you can be a spiritually inclined person and practice physics just as well, in my own opinion, better.
Right. I think so too, because you're more open to.
You're more open, and you're more open to creativity. That
you know,
way.
Science just can't go 3/4 of the way and say, okay, we're done. You know, it's been proven that intention exists and is powerful, and they've got to finish the work.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, personally, I don't see anything wrong with a scientist admitting that if he has a creative moment, you know, like you talked about, where it's all delivered holographically to your brain, and suddenly it wasn't there, and suddenly it is there. It's delivered to you whole cloth, and that's what we call pure creativity. And most people who are honest with themselves would ask, I didn't do that. Where'd it come from?
That's true.
But generally, scientists are like, scientists tend to be like the child who's learning how to ride a bicycle. And they want to know that you're there holding them up until they learn how to pedal it. But once they start to pedal it, they say, I've got it, it's mine.
Yeah.
And forget how they got there. And that's what happens in science is when the creative thought shows up, they immediately take ownership of it. Right. And then it belongs to the ego. Right?
Yeah.
And that's typically what happens. You typically will not find a scientist who will stop, you know, and just be in gratitude.
Yeah.
Right? They seldom do that.
And I know we're about to run out of time, but I have one thing I want to say about that is, you know, personally, I don't think the mind thinks. I see the mind as being, either it's turned on and it's working or it's not.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yes.
And if that's true, if it's like a computer like that, you know, we have to put a CD into a computer to run the word processing package.
Mm-hmm,
first, we've got to put the DOS in there, the operating system, you know.
Mm, right.
Well, if we don't think, where's it coming from?
Well, what I would suggest is that you could have a model of the mind that says that the mind doesn't think, but it knows. And it doesn't think because...
Well, I don't consider the brain the mind.
No, not at all. No, absolutely.
I think the mind's contained in the electromagnetic fields.
Well,
and
if you want to use that,
if you
certainly can use that metaphor, and it might very well be useful.
The brain's that gray clump of matter in the top of our head.
That's where the thinking occurs. The mind doesn't think because it doesn't have to. If you already know something, you don't have to think about it. So if the mind can be said to know everything there is to know, the question that we have to deal with is how do we get all that knowing down here?
I'll tell you. You be still.
Yeah, there you go.
And
I think you were
listen.
Mentioning that earlier that you have to be open.
You have to stop thinking, to be honest.
That's basically, I agree with that.
Stop thinking.
I agree.
Yeah. Well.
Okay, well, it's been a good session. And I guess we're about out of time here, so that was, I thought, a fruitful discussion.
Well, let us know what you think of our dialogues. We'd be curious to know what you think. Agape, and we'll see you next week.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.